Hello and welcome to episode 121 of the Nerds Assemble podcast.
This week we'll be looking at Catan, Hotline Miami 2, X-Files, comics, and for our feature is the TV license value for money. Nerds.
Hi, I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, a.k.a. Cookie, I'm back.
And I'm Paul, a.k.a. Retroid, is still here.
Not for long.
Ooh, threat.
As ever, you can find notes for this episode over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. You can also comment there, you can find links to social accounts, or you could just get in touch with us right now, or comment on the show as well, in general. Contact
shout
us.
Really loud.
Yeah, contact at nerdsassemble.co.uk for email, or you can try tweeting us at nerdspodcast. Also, we are still running a listener survey, and we would really appreciate it if you could go to bit.ly/nerds2015 and fill the damn thing out. 5 of you have done it so far. We know there's more than 5 of you listening to the show due to all our stats that we have. So,
and we can hear you, know, you breathing.
What you don't actually realise is that that's me and the other pools. You know, that's 3 of us. And
were we supposed to fill it out?
No. It would interfere with the results.
That's why 3 of them say it more Commodore 64 stuff.
Hang on.
Can we just say that, you know, just in case you're wondering, we're not saying that, you know, don't, you know, post questions to us on Facebook or whatnot. You can do. It's just that, you know, Emily keeps on forgetting to say about Facebook.
Facebook is...
If you're, you know, that way inclined.
Facebook is an interesting platform in that it's really bad to get people to interact with you on that without spending lots of money.
Really?
Yes, because of all the algorithm changes they've done over the past 2 years. And I would like to apologise to people, the few of you that there are. I know there's a few of you. You're actually in the minority, but... you listen to our podcast through iTunes, and that episode 120 wasn't on there when it should have been. Actually, I think it might have affected Stitcher as well. Feedburner, which is what the RSS gets run through, decided not to recognise that there was an actual, you know, podcast episode within the blog post.
Just randomly.
It does this occasionally. And so thanks to last week's guest, Kevin, for telling me. I managed to sort it out on Friday, and you can, if you haven't been able to listen to the previous episode through iTunes, you definitely now can.
But put it this way, unless you hear something from us on Twitter saying that the episode's been cancelled, you can expect a regular episode every Tuesday.
Yeah. Unless something, you know, unless it all goes to pot, new episodes
which,
on Tuesday.
You know, it has done once or twice, but I think we've managed to do quite a, you know, good run of it so far.
It could be quite regular, to be fair.
Yeah. I'm going to move on to our first bit of news. We're not going to talk too much about this, but there might be innuendo. That maybe we should have an innuendo warning. Should there be an innuendo warning?
No, because that ruins half the fun.
Innuendo.
The NFL Green Bay Packers love Settlers of Catan. It has been revealed in the Wall Street Journal.
I find this awesome.
The team apparently 2 months ago started having a board games night, and the game of choice has been Settlers of Catan.
I find it quite cool.
As far as I can tell, even with the expansion, that is only expanding from 4 to 6 players.
They must either they take it in turns, or maybe there's more than. I think there's only one copy of the game around, or there might be teams.
Maybe they've got teams.
Apparently, it's good for helping them strategize.
I'm not surprised, to be honest.
They all fight over getting wood.
Mm. Oh. I mean, think about board games is that there is a hell of a lot of strategy in them, despite the fact that, you know, when you think of strategy in board games, you think chess. And it's like, no, there's way more types of games other than chess.
Well, I want to know is if anyone's ever
had... hippos.
I wonder if anyone's ever had like a fight in the changing room because of going back on alliances. Going back on alliances that had been forged during a game of Catan and then breaking those alliances. because that's what happens in Catan.
It does kind of make me wonder, because I know when you're kind of you know, alone and you've got no friends with you and whatnot, you can always boot up the Xbox 360 and play Catan on that. And, you know, I always, you know, well, quite like doing that every now and again. But the only problem is that, you know...
The AI players are mean?
Well, no. Well, the main AI players are quite mean on hard. But you kind of get to, like, you know, you stick it on medium or whatever. And you kind of play through it. And you kind of want to keep going after the, you know, score to 10.
Hmm.
So you just want to kind of decimate, you know, your enemies. Just, you know, build, you know, roll roads all over the place.
Oh, just imagine if somebody starts off in the center because they think they've got a good ore situation going on, or something that's usually quite rare, and then you just entomb them with roads and they never get to a port if they don't know how to play properly.
That, I'm pretty sure that has happened.
That situation would be shock and awe.
But I mean, after a while, you know, there'll be nothing that you can do. You can't get to ports or whatnot, so you can't do the, you know,
you can't do any trade to that help.
Yeah, and you'll also not be able to expand anymore, especially if you, you know, already kind of get up to what is it, city levels rather than just, you know, towns and villages. And yeah, have you guys ever played Catan?
Nope.
I think I've seen one game getting played, but most of the time I've been playing Carcassonne.
See, what's interesting is that Settlers of Catan has also actually featured on The Big Bang Theory.
It's featured in a lot of places. But I still remember somebody saying once upon a time that people who play a lot of Civilization, as in the video game, really hate people that play a lot of Settlers of Catan. This is a weird thing I've heard from a random source at one point. Right. I don't understand why. So if anyone knows...
Is this kind of like the, oh, people are either a fan of Star Wars or Star Trek, they can't be both, that I
kept hearing? I think to a certain level, it's more I would imagine that it'd be based on more like how aggressive you want to be, because Settlers of Catan, the most aggressive you can be is to basically place the rubber when you get the chance on a specific opponent's tile.
And refuse to trade.
Yeah, and refuse to trade. Whereas, you know, with, you know, something like Civilization, obviously you can try and take over territories and stuff. But, you know, once you've got a road or, you know, a settlement, then that's there for the rest of the game. There's, you know, nothing that the other players can actually do about
it. It's not like you can pull up with some catapults and then just start launching rocks at either an AI or a human player's location.
Or nuke Gandhi.
Or nuke Gandhi. Or have Gandhi nuke you, depending on how he's feeling. I'm going to move on to our next story, speaking of video games. And
anyone listening just at that particular point will get really confused.
You know, because we just got to get it out of our system. Yeah. Wood for sheep.
Sheep for wood. Wood for sheep.
Wood for sheep. That's...
It happens in Catan, though.
I'm not one to judge. if anyone has wood for sheep, then that's
corn.
I'm going to move to, so I'm not sure if any. I mean, I'm assuming you guys heard at least one or two of you. But Hotline Miami 2 got refused classification in Australia last week.
Yeah.
Australia.
But
just,
this
just when we thought it'd be less.
I mean, it would probably was never going to get a rating in Australia, but in their initial sort of like summarization of the game and why they're not going to rate it and thus allow it for sale in Australia, they were like they over-egged the content of the game in their description of what happened. They described the opening. It wasn't. They might have over-exaggerated. And added some flourishes of their own.
As in, invented.
To the opening of the game. They claimed that in the opening of the game, which is available in a game in a trailer that Devolver Digital have had available for ages, it's like the first bit of the game you can see in this thing, and you walk into the house, you start shooting people, or not a house, but a building, you start shooting people pretty by-the-by for Hotline Miami. You know, walk into a place, shoot people. And then you sort of get up to the floor, shoot some more people, and then you get into a room where you knock out a barely dressed woman. And then if you haven't before this point opted to, because there's a choice screen before all of this going, do you wish to sort of like include scenes of a sexual nature, yes or no? If you click no, then you, or you know, whatever, you don't get sexual scenes. If you say yeah, you're fine with it, then you have sexy scenes. And so basically, once you've knocked this woman out, if you've agreed to have content of sexual nature, it appears that the very tiny sprites, the sprite you were playing as, what's the word I'm looking for? Has unconsensual sex with the female sprite. Yeah. So technically it's rape. And yeah, that it was rape. However, what the Board of Classification in Australia decided to do for the game and say was, oh yeah, there's like thrusting going on and stuff. And the woman appears to be fighting, you know, is fighting back against this. And it's like that doesn't happen.
Have they got the HD version of
it? What it probably is that they realise that the game won't be rated with the content that it's got. So what they probably have done is kind of lied about, you know, just how bad it is so that they can pretend to repeal it a bit.
But then that doesn't work because of the fact that the video, I mean, like there's a video of the bit they're describing has existed for months online.
Yeah.
And so Devolver, as soon as they saw this comment from the classification board were like, that is not the case. And also pointed out they kind of ignored the fact that you make it a choice as to whether or not to see this. But, yeah. I mean, after seeing that particular opening, personally, I don't really want to play Hotline Miami 2. I think I'll just stick with being bad at the first
one. It's never really interested me, to be fair.
Isn't that scene supposed to also be like part of a film? Or
yeah, it is. And then the wider context is actually a scene from a film.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
So it's a fiction within the fiction.
To be honest, I'm kind of getting sick of the games where you basically just go around killing people.
What I want to know is the Last Tango in Paris banned in Australia? Butter scene.
For the film.
Yeah. The butter scene.
I don't
remember that.
There's a particular French brand of butter which is still trying to shake for over 30 years its association with this particular scene in The Last Tango in Paris, in which there sexy times of a rather anal nature.
Sexy times of a rather anal nature.
Yes. We swear on this podcast.
If we were on Alan Davis's As Yet Untitled, that would be the title of the episode.
their fault for, you know, calling the butter, you know, bum fun. derriere de something.
To cut a long story short, though, it's not getting a proper release in Australia. Devolver at one point seemed to be encouraging people to pirate the game in Australia once it's out because they won't be able to get it digitally, or some such things.
Or use a proxy.
Yeah.
They could just do that and then...
Yeah, and then pay for it.
Wait. Are you saying that who's saying to pirate it?
Devolver, the people publishing it.
Yeah. The publishers?
Yeah, because they're keen on people actually playing the game. But only if you're not from Australia. If you're the rest of you, it's like, well, just get out, Bruce.
Is your name Bruce? Here's where you can download.
That does sound really bad, though, because, I mean, it's a publisher going against, you know, the board of an entire country and encouraging people of that country quite dodgy. Is that just me?
Because the the particular board in this particular country is a joke.
Yeah, Mortal Kombat's had problems there before. Left 4 Dead 2 was banned for how long?
But by the same token, there's, you know, that what they're basically doing is they're promoting an illegal act.
Well, I'm not sure if it's actually illegal to indulge in unregulated media in that country. I'm not sure how many countries have gone that far. I'm going to move us on to our next story, and we're going to try and talk about this correctly, unlike every other bloody news site I've seen today.
You are.
My mate Dave Internet said...
Yeah, Fox could be bringing back X-Files and 24.
They are. It's all done. It's all
I read it in the mirror.
Yeah. This is based on a QA with two of the people who are sort of dealing with Fox as, you know, obviously as a production company of sorts for television from last week. And Variety have got the most quotes from this Q&A, and none of them, Bloody Disgusting had a ridiculous article about it in which they didn't quote any of the quotes or link to any sources. Then the Mirror, I noticed, had done a similar sort of thing. And I'm just a bit pissed at the moment, because it's like, well, no, it's not 100% at the moment that Eva would come back. And it's the same with Prison Break could also come back as well. And it's like that there are talks happening, but nothing is confirmed for definite.
It'd be nice to see Deathly 24 and X-Files come back. Prison Break, not really bothered.
I don't care about 24. I've never watched more than like an episode, and I find the whole thing ridiculous. But
I'm still stuck on is it season 7? I think I'm stuck on at the moment. With 24. Yeah, I've found it hard to get back to it.
Okay,
basically.
I quite liked the 24 in the 1980s sketch that I saw. Have you seen that?
No.
Where it would be what it would be like filming, foiling all these plots in 1980s, where it would be right. We have to get some of the documents, so it has to be faxed over, or search for it on the internet, America Online Disc Dial Up.
Both would be being considered for limited series. So in the case of 24, it'd be probably something like, was it Live Another Day? The thing that happened last year around May. However, it's unlikely. It's looking unlikely that Kiefer Sutherland would return. But in all fairness, he's getting on a bit. It's quite a demanding role to be Jack Bauer.
Probably almost as old as Retroid.
I think Kiefer Sutherland is older than Retroid. I'm going to make that call. I'm hoping right now that I'm right.
Yes. He's quite a little bit older than me. I was watching films. I was watching films with him in when I was in school.
Yeah. Yeah, there we go.
So there!
I just ask, if they did bring back the X-Files, would they do that? Because, would they brand it like Series 10, or would they do Series 11?
This is another annoying thing that of the sites have ignored, is the fact that there's a properly licensed, agreed comic book series that's been going for almost 2 years that is Season 10 of X-Files.
I think they would probably either pilfer that for, some stories, or just completely ignore it.
Yeah.
Also, can we have a rule that David Duchovny never writes another bloody episode?
Which one did he write?
He wrote that stupid alien baseball one.
Oh, at least. Oh, yeah.
Where it's like, oh, David Duchovny wrote it. He really has no fucking idea what he's doing.
I also think William Gibson should perhaps be kept away from the series, despite how campily fun his episodes were. Just saying. In the case of X-Files and everything that's happened with the comics have done a sort of reasonable job of following on from the TV series and the films. But as anyone who perhaps has read my reviews on Hex has seen over the past couple of years, I have a severe love-hate relationship with Season 10 comics, because a lot of the time there's you wait for payoff, and the payoff rarely happens in the comics, and there's a few good bits. But that does remind me that I think the next issue of X-Files comic should be out this week, and I think the first issue of the New Millennium comic should be out this week as well. And hopefully I'm going to read that.
I mean, it's quite an interesting one, because how would we feel if something like Farscape was brought back, or Buffy was brought back?
Tons has happened with Buffy in the comics. Buffy's
too old.
Yeah, but Buffy's been continuing in comic book form.
Yeah.
So there's
in comic book form is cool.
Also, what about Sarah Michelle Gellar's stellar movie career?
Well, yeah, she just wouldn't have the time, would she?
Doing another Scooby.
You know what's kind of freaky? Is just, you know, because Alison Hannigan, obviously she was playing Willow, and then she went into How I Met Your Mother. How many series is that How I Met Your Mother done?
An alarming amount.
It was is that about eight or nine?
Yeah, but I mean, it's finished now.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, I know that.
But I think it was, yeah, it was either eight or nine.
How I Met Your Dad or something.
Yeah. Going back to the X-Files comic situation, I had to correct somebody on a Facebook page.
And I've apologised.
Over the weekend. Which doesn't happen. It's not something I do very often. I was really.
Is that anything to do with Cthulhu crotch?
No.
Was someone wrong on the internet?
Yeah, someone was wrong. And being a woman and obviously replying on Facebook, which meant that it linked to obviously my profile on that, I was really worried because it was to a man that I would have got it in the neck. Thankfully, I didn't. But this guy was saying, like, he correctly said, because the this was with Cinema Blend's Facebook page and an article they linked to of their own talking about all this. And I was like, and they failed to mention the comic. It's like, oh, it's had all this and that, you know, X-Files has had. And it's like, yeah, and you failed to mention the long-running comic series that Chris Carter does have a minor hand in. This guy then mentioned that on the Facebook page post for this. Yeah. And then a guy was like, oh, what season 10? There's no season 10. He's like, no, there is. There's comics and that. It's written by Chris Carter. And it was at that point that I had to step in and go, actually, they're not written by Chris Carter. They're written by this guy called Joe Harris. Chris Carter occasionally oversees the storylines. No reply. So I'm hoping that happens smoothly and safely and that I will have no retribution for it whatsoever.
Until he listens to this podcast.
Oh, what will happen is that someone else, a bloke, will come along and say, actually, Chris Carter doesn't write it.
And that'll be, thanks for pointing that out.
That's happened before.
Yes,
yeah.
That has.
I've seen it, not in this particular subject. Well, and it is weird.
I'm living
in a Twilight Zone episode.
That was on LinkedIn.
LinkedIn, oh.
Oh, that was really bad. We're not going to go into details for that. But let's just say I've been ignored on social media before when I've stated the bloody obvious and or corrected people for stuff that's easily searchable on Wikipedia.
And then somebody else has kind of got in afterwards, you know, kind of said the exact same thing and they've been thanked.
Yeah.
As I've pointed out, you know, before, it is a fast show sketch.
Yes.
Written by Arabella Weir, where a bunch of blokes will be, as an example, in one of them, it was around a car because someone had, you know, this bloke had locked his keys in the car.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, they're all around and discussing how to get into the car. And Arabella Weir walks along and goes, oh, I know how to do this. You cut a ping pong ball in half.
I think it was a tennis ball.
Yeah.
Well remembered.
And, you know, and do that. And they all completely ignore it. And then one of the blokes there says, oh, I know. What about if you cut a ping pong ball in half and put it over the lock and it'll pop it?
Yeah.
Mm. And it is a really weird phenomenon. And I have seen it firsthand. I don't understand.
Yeah. I'm going to move us on to our next bit of news for the week. Final bit of news of the week.
Away from the rage.
But again, I don't know if this is going to annoy people or not. Depends how you feel about comics, generally.
Yay, comics are good.
Marvel and DC, unsurprisingly, dominated 2014 sales in comics and graphic novels in the US and beyond. This is based on sales figures from Diamond, who are certainly the main distributors for comics firsthand in the US. They have distribution over here. Yeah, well, it depends if you what level down the chain of buying stuff it comes from, because you might be buying from somebody who's already bought from Diamond. But anyway, yes. Stuff happened last year. Sales rose last year for comics and graphic novels. The rise wasn't as big as what was seen in 2013. Which was overall 10% rise, but comic sales were up 4.39% year on year. Oh wait, no, it's both comics and graphic novels increased by 4.39% in comparison to 2013. But it seems that they're still perhaps feeling the effects of all the filmy stuff in terms of their sales.
Yeah, my question would be, for any random person off the street, do they actually realise that comics isn't just superheroes?
People who publish graphic novels do, because Image had more titles in the top 10 sales of graphic novels for last year, which includes stuff like Walking Dead, Saga, Sex Criminals, which was
really good. They've got a lot of stuff coming out this year that looks really interesting as well.
Yeah. I've got a hot Image. Tip on Image Comics a bit later, but yeah.
Ooh. But yeah, no, Image are doing really well. And they've just bought Top Shelf Publications as well.
Mm. But I suppose, yeah, that generally, I would say, trying to put my thoughts together with this, the people most concerned normally with buying individual comic sales tend to be the more traditionalist fans, as in, like, people who buy single issues tend to be more people who buy Marvel or DC. Marvel outsold DC. They had a higher market share for last year. It was
which isn't surprising.
Yeah, the market share for Marvel is 35% for last year, and DC was 28%. Image managed to get up to almost 10% of market share for last year. So, it's, you know, pretty good going.
Does make me wonder what 2000 AD.
I don't think they were necessarily included, because in America, 2000 AD is published under some. It might be Dark Horse or IDW publish 2000 AD.
I'd be curious how Dark Horse and a few of the smaller publishers that I used to read are doing, like Antarctic Press.
Dark Horse are doing all right. I mean, they're still.
Getting away,
but I mean they did have the benefit of having the Star Wars license until this one.
Now that's with Marvel.
I mean, do you reckon stuff like Comixology has kind of helped out the
I mean, obviously this doesn't take into that account, because this is Diamond talking about physical sales. Comixology haven't seemed to release any sales data for last year yet. I would kind of hope that they might do soon.
Yeah.
Because it'd be interesting, because certainly at least a year after Amazon's bought them.
That's a really frustrating thing about digital, because you rarely get numbers coming out. So it's stuff like this, you know, Steam sales, there's... the convoluted ways that they'd managed to get hold of approximate sales figures for stuff like Xbox Live Arcade stuff when I was still paying attention to that market, where they would count how many entries were in the high score tables. Because no figures were ever released, so that's how I knew some games that I really liked had, you know, pretty much tanked. Because, you know, they'd have maybe 1,000 or so on the high score tables after a week or two. And you say, that's bad.
Wow.
But, you know, that is the only way you can find out. And, of course, are Nintendo actually going to, you know, release any figures? Because, you know, saying, you know, before we were recording about, you know, the sales figures, you know, for Wii U software, I have no idea how much they're selling digitally.
Yeah, that's very true. And really the stupid thing is, though, is that digitally, you should have figures on that. I would imagine it would be very, very easy to poll how many downloads you've had.
It does mean, because certainly a bunch of these companies, there's investors, shareholders basically involved, and obviously that means that there's reporting happening every quarter.
Yeah.
And it's been a while since I've dug through. I mean, certainly the last time I dug through a financial report of an entertainment company, especially certainly in gaming, was before digital was really big. So there was never anything really said about digital sales of content. But I do wonder if it is perhaps bigged up now. But I mean, I don't know what kind of company Valve is in America, because they obviously don't. I don't think they're the kind of company that actually obviously does release.
Well, when you say kind updates, of company, do you mean like limited liability?
Well,
company
they don't
or...
have limited company in the US type.
They don't.
Well, they have different company structures, and but then again, I thought in America it was like after you reach a certain income point you have to start reporting anyway, to some degree.
I think when it comes to amounts and profits and things like that, yes. But when it comes to actual,
where's it coming from?
Yeah. We sold X copies of this game, or in this case, you know, Comixology, X copies of these comics.
They didn't bother.
I don't think there's any requirement.
But then that's kind of silly, because if you look at like a regular company, they'll say which department's been performing best if there's sort of something that's quite diversified. You know, they'll say in their annual reports and quarterly reports, oh, this bit's done this well and this bit's done that well. So, yeah. But, yeah, so comic sales, physical comic sales are up, according to Diamond, at least in the US.
That's really not saying that much, though, is it?
No. It's certainly not at the heady levels of, what, the 80s?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even, well, when, you know, back about, you know, turn of the 90s, when I was, you know, reading a lot of comics, and again, most of them were not superhero stuff, because I've never been, you know, when it comes to the comics, I've never been a huge superhero fan. So
I feel like I remember reading Dan Dare.
I mean, I read
2000 AD up until a point, and I've still got a soft spot for it. But yeah, buying American stuff, most of the stuff I liked was, you know, like small press or indie.
What'll be interesting to discover is basically the types of, you know, retailers that are actually selling more stuff. I mean, do you reckon Waterstones, for example, are selling more stuff, or Amazon are selling more stuff, or, you know, specialized comic book shops, or is it news agents or whatnot tanking?
Yeah, I would love to know how well Graphic Novel Collection would, because I've got a feeling that, you know, they'll be doing better than individual comics.
What's funny is that if you look at the other end of the publishing industry, away from comics, you look at regular books, if you have the money, you can find tons of data on book sales. Basically, you'd have to, like, pay for a level of a Nielsen book scanner access.
Yeah.
And you'd certainly have access then to sort of, like, what's happening with the hard copy sales. Amazon, it's up to them whether or not they report on their ebook sales, or you would sort of rely on individual publishers reporting how many copies of that ebook sold. But certainly for physical book sales, if you've got, you know, spare couple hundred quid a year, you can you can get hold of the data.
And what gets me is you'll always get some people who are, why are you obsessing over the numbers? So, well, frankly, if I want to know numbers about, you know, a game or a TV series or a film or a book or anything that I'm interested in, the only reason I'm really interested in, you know, sales or viewing figures or, you know, anything like that, is because I want to know if it will continue.
Yeah,
it's not a matter of mine is the winningest because it's got a slightly bigger number. I don't care about that. Is it doing well enough for there to be more of the thing that I like?
Absolutely. I mean, especially when it comes to, say, for example, TV programs, you know, and they kind of measure audiences by kind of millions of viewers and whatnot. And you will see that the series that get cancelled kind of start out, you know, with, you know, relatively high numbers and then drop so dramatically over the next couple of episodes. Those are the ones that get cancelled rather than the ones that start off with kind of a bit lower numbers, but kind of continue.
And then slowly build it.
Yeah.
Either build it or only decrease by, you know, a certain amount each week.
But then I think part of the problem is certainly because obviously we're referring more to US broadcasters with that issue than UK ones. The problem with US broadcasters, their samples are bad, as in like the size. Like they keep forgetting is like, well, there's over 365 million people living in America.
Yeah.
Not over 360. Like, there's over 300 million people certainly living in America, and it's like, what, you've got like 900,000 people of that population to watch that TV episode. I think that's pretty good going if you manage to get that kind of numbers, but it's like, if it's not over a million or something, they start to get a bit panicky. And
they can be
crazy.
Insanely cutthroat in the States. And just this week, this last week, I was hearing how, was it Broadchurch on ITV? I think its second episode was nearly half the viewership of the first episode. And it's like, oh, that sounds a bit
bad. Then, massive drop off.
But then does that include people watching it through ITV's
That's the question.
I have no idea.
That's the question. They don't publish figures on, you know, what they include in the figures.
I think we should move on to what we've been up to, which isn't just looking up stats, I'd like to point out to people. Retroid.
Sure?
What you been up to?
what, apart from a certain space game.
X-Men?
Yes. No. I've been...
X-Men versus TIE Fire.
I want to get hold of that. But
this is going to be a long night.
Yeah.
And I've got all the Wing Commanders to go through as well. I'm still playing.
Of course.
What have you actually been doing?
Well, we signed up for another dealie with, something you want in the post from Amazon. We can deliver it for you on Sunday by courier if you sign up with Amazon Prime, for a 3 month trial. Anyways, okay. And of course, with that comes the Amazon Prime Video.
Mm.
So I've been sitting down and catching up with Constantine, which I know Cookie has also been watching.
Yeah,
further ahead than
me. I'm
old Dave Internet. I like your mate Dave Internet.
He's a good mate, isn't he?
He is very nice. Yes.
Yeah, I'm not sure about some of the information he gives.
I think you need to chronicle at some point the adventures of Dave Internet.
Mm.
Maybe.
It'll be our memoirs.
It'll be like the Hitler Diaries again. With the how legitimate that was. But I'm just up to the episode that, without spoilers, an old friend of John's has a junkie friend.
Oh, yeah.
Has turned up. And, things don't go that well for him, as is the habit of people who are around John Constantine.
Because Constantine isn't council at the moment. It's this weird limbo state where they're having a break, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, because they only got... Well, it's only actually got 13 episodes the first season anyway.
It's kind of funny that it's in a limbo state considering what the series is.
It's kind of funny how there's actually quite a few American series that are actually, going on this kind of 13 episode or 12 episode structure now.
Mm. It's a shame though, because I'm actually preferring Constantine to Gotham.
I am.
Ooh, maybe I need to watch it.
Gotham. No, I think it might be because it's different, slightly different. There's a lot more co-op shows.
Which
about.
Is kind of interesting because I know that because we've preferred the second series of S.H.I.E.L.D. to Gotham, and we've heard a lot of people have the opposite opinion where it's like, oh no, Gotham's better than S.H.I.E.L.D.
I really like Gotham. I like how they build the characters and the drama, but when you take that all back, it's just a regular cop show every week.
I have to admit, with Gotham, I know I sort of like have blamed it for it tried to chuck too much into the pilot episode, but it was still nowhere near as bad as the Tomorrow People for chucking in everything into one episode, and Tomorrow People got cancelled.
Leave it alone. Tomorrow People should never have been cancelled.
I've liked what I've seen of Gotham, but yeah, it's more because it's on rather than I can't wait for the next episode of Gotham.
Technically, none of us have been able to watch it whilst it's been broadcast on Channel 5 over here, because when it's been on, when we've been podcasting.
But thanks to the miracle of
Dave Internet.
Dave Internet.
Well, Dave Catchup. Which is his cousin. He's more legitimate than Dave Internet.
Oh, that's
Dave Catchup.
No, Gotham. I really like Gotham. It's just that I prefer. There's just something about Constantine which always pulls me back.
Constantine, to me, it has. I had doubts about it, but it does seem to be nailing the feel of the comic more than anything else I've seen.
The last Constantine related thing I read was the new 52 Constantine comics.
No, you didn't, because that doesn't exist.
And that was horrible, like the first couple of issues of that. I just couldn't stand it.
That's because you imagined it, because it doesn't exist.
What else have you been up to, Retroid?
Well, while I've been playing a certain space game, which I'm... I think I get the feeling that I am almost coming up to the point of being either elite or dangerous. while I've been on long cruises, I have sometimes picked up my Vita, and because you were talking about it last week, Emily, I've started playing TXK again.
I'll admit that I've been playing more TXK this week. I might as well get that out of the way at this point.
Well, so. I thought if I'm mentioning it as well.
Have you been sneakily doing that? Because I've not seen...
There was a moment a couple of times whilst I've been cooking and I've been waiting for stuff to cook that I've been sat with my Christmas present playing TXK.
Is this like a secret habit that you've been keeping from me?
It's
look, the Christmas present is getting used, Paul.
Yeah, but you've got stuff that you're keeping from me.
All I can say is space is everything.
I'm not sure how this relationship is going to work if you're keeping from me TXK.
Yeah. What do you mean how this relationship works? She tells you what to do and you do as you're told. Simple.
It wasn't tonight. I'm just going to point out. I didn't play TXK whilst you were cooking curry.
I'm so glad that you haven't progressed.
This is so much full of innuendo.
I'm so
like a whole different conversation in euphemism.
So what you're trying to say is that you haven't progressed to the point where you're making me do stuff so that you can secretly that's like evil.
When you got the drink for her earlier, that's when she
she whipped it out and had a quick crack on it.
I still haven't managed to get past level 4, and I don't know how to up my game to be able to do that.
Try not
doing it in private.
Oh, dear God. You're basically still in the tutorial, so that's kind of okay. It will click.
Somebody's got a filthy mind, I think.
You see, the more you know, the more you practice at it, the better you'll get.
Excuse me, whilst I just turn Paul away from the microwave and before he did
the microwave.
Microphone. The microwave. He's deafing me so much, mate.
Have a minute. Get in the microwave now. You've been naughty.
Stop laughing.
Yeah, and get that PSP out of there.
I've been. You've only heard the one bit of music in game now.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah,
it changes about level 14.
Okay.
15, something like that. But yeah, basically, stop the enemies from getting up the web.
I got that.
I don't.
I'm not very good at moving around the web once it's no longer circular.
Yeah.
I find it.
You'll kind of get used to that because it's sometimes you're on the outside of the web and sometimes you're on the inside. So it slightly differs whether left or right works on a level per level basis.
Okay.
But the smart bomb is your friend. You can only use it once a level.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a little bit different in that most games it's a weapon of last resort. Whereas in this, it will actually double the score you get for each enemy killed with it.
Okay, so sometimes it'd be good to get into a safe position, have the enemies build up, and then unleash it.
Or sometimes it's even worth getting yourself trapped, so long as there are a lot of enemies.
Okay.
And then you use the smart bomb, you get double the score you would have otherwise, and you'll also probably get power-ups. Also, if you get the jump power-up, that can be handy because you can jump off the web, and then when you're at the height of the jump, you can use a smart bomb, and then it will travel slower down, and it will get more enemies.
Okay.
But basically, if you're on level 4, you are pretty much on the tutorial, so just play around and see what works.
Okay.
But I am
no. Shush.
I am approving that. You've gone back to it.
Okay.
We are so going to have to do a Nerds After Dark.
Cookie, what have you been up to?
Oh, sorry. I was just turning my ears off there. All these innuendos. Not a lot.
In your endo.
Been watching Constantine and House of Cards.
Yeah.
I decided to find out why he was raped.
Do you understand why I like it now?
Yeah, I've been hooked. I've actually finished both seasons, so that's got to say something.
Near the end of... I'm like maybe 3 episodes away from finishing my rewatch of season 2. I rewatched season 1 over the weekend.
I'm very tempted to do the same because with season 3 coming, I've not rewatched the first season.
Mm.
Either. Yeah, no. So, when I was watching season 2, it was like... Oh yeah, vaguely remember.
I finally.
It's definitely worth watching again.
I finally found out the meaning behind the logo for the series because an upside down flag.
Yes.
And actually, that's in certainly in marine circles, that would be a symbol of distress.
Yes. Which is why it amuses me when we want our country back. We're not racist, but we just want all the people who aren't white out because we're not racist. But if you notice, they usually have the flag upside down.
Mm. Yeah,
because they're too damn stupid to realize that they're actually putting it up the wrong way. It says, "I'm being all patriotic." No, you're in distress. You're an idiot.
Which is kind of difficult to do when with the British flag.
I didn't know whether it was the same in the US, whether putting the flag up upside down was
House of Cards, Cookie. So, what do you think of Frank? What do you think of Frank?
Frank is a really manipulative little schemer, isn't he, little fucking twat? But no, he's. It's difficult with Frank because 1 minute you're thinking, I can get on with him. The next time you see him, and he's like, "You fucking wanker." It keeps you hooked though. That's the problem.
He is Claire, a complicated character as well.
He is very complicated.
Actually, they're both very complicated characters with their own.
Claire is as well. Yeah, definitely.
Because we've been talking about a Netflix series at the moment, and I'm just thinking about how I still need to finally see the BBC miniseries of House of Cards.
Yes, you do.
But I was going to point out that there was a whole load of panicking, I think it was last week at some point, that BBC was going to end its deal with Netflix because the contract was up, blah, blah. Mm. And loads of websites panicking about it, specifically talking about the American version. Because I looked at some of the shows they were talking about, and I was like, I've never seen some of those shows on the UK Netflix, because they mentioned Coupling and I think a couple of others. And I was like, I've never seen that on UK Netflix. So they must be talking about the US one. But BBC and Netflix have signed a deal since the panic of last week, in case that was the last you heard. That's fine for those American listeners out there. You're still going to get BBC on Netflix. As for UK listeners, nothing was said, but it was great how all the geek websites, even the ones that know they have a UK audience, were reporting about it. And it's like, you're not looking into this enough, really, because you're sort of... Netflix does its distribution deals based on territory.
You know, I have found that websites do generally tend to stick
American.
Basically just stick to American release dates and stick to American schedules rather than UK ones, which is kind of, if you're basically living outside the US, it's like, well, when's it coming to me?
Cookie, have you been enjoying Constantine?
Yeah, no, I have. As I was saying, I mean, I really like Gotham. I think Gotham's great, but there's something about Constantine which is a bit fresher. And
it's been a while since we've had a show like that, isn't it?
It is, yeah, and that's why.
I'm just going to put it out right now. There's a box set of seasons 1 to 8 Supernatural staring at me. Box set of Supernatural seasons 1 to 8 staring at me from across the room.
I never got into Supernatural. So,
I think it's more for Emily's sake, to be honest. I have the feeling that, two brothers going along demon hunting is going to appeal more to Emily than me.
You liked Angel.
Yeah, I liked Angel, but
when you think about how long ago that was now.
Yeah, that was very long.
I was a young man back then.
I'm gonna
I didn't have a bus pass, but I know.
Paul, what have you been doing? I've been catching the odd bit of House of Cards. What have you been doing?
Well, I've not really been watching House of Cards.
I know, you've just been seeing bits and pieces when I've been pointing it out to you.
Just fragments of space.
When you've been allowed out of the kitchen, young man.
yes, you've been... This entire week I've done nothing because I've been kept in the kitchen.
What, washing up? Yeah.
Washing up, making sandwiches and...
Yeah,
where's the tuna melt?
Yeah, that's a good point. You promised before we started, there were requests for tuna melts, and what did Retroid want?
Toast.
You want toast?
Well, the tuna melt, you're going to have to wait for me to regenerate before I stick the extra mayo on.
Oi! Need a water spray bowl, I think.
Bad pull. Very bad pull.
He made bad innuendo joke. You could talk about Captain Toad Treasure Tracker, but you've been really naughty this episode, so I'm not sure you should be allowed.
That's it. The reuse being banned and brought to my house. After now,
I'm scared to ask what brand of fridge freezer he has.
Fridge freezer.
Smeg.
Yes, it could be related, depending.
How far into Captain Toad Treasure Tracker have you gotten?
I've pretty much completed it. I mean, the main story mode.
Have you gone all the way? Sorry.
You're not.
I'm not. No. I could say something, but no.
Okay.
I do not understand what you're talking about.
Just the tip of the iceberg.
Okay, well, I've pretty much done all of the proper levels, and I'm currently kind of going through I'd say mid to late end of the kind of revamped Super Mario levels. Currently because with the Super Mario levels you have different objectives with them. Mm-hmm. So, say for example, the first one, it's to kind of find the green star, which is kind of at the end of the levels. That's, using kind of levels from Super Mario 3D World. Because it's
cool.
Because part of the story thing, at the end of the proper original Toad's Treasure Tracker, it actually goes into the beginning of Super Mario 3D World. So you actually see, like, Mario and Luigi and Peach and Toad. So it's like Toad.
It's almost like GTA 5, where you have things from different perspectives, or GTA 4 with the different characters.
Mm.
Mm. Yeah.
But Nintendo.
Yeah. So, you see, pretty much the intro to New Super Mario 3D World, where, Mario, Luigi, Peach and Toad is going towards this big see-through pipe and, whacking it and, fixing it, and then you get the, Bowser comes
along.
Yeah. And the scene continues, and it's like Captain Toad kind of comes along and is like, ooh, what's this? And then kind of jumps in the pipe as well. So it kind of does
fit
in with
Wells. The only time he jumps in the game. The only time.
Yeah, well, he struggles to get into the pipe,
scared.
To be fair.
He can't resist a good
fight. He can't jump. Captain Toad can't jump. It is an actual issue.
Wasn't that a film in the 90s with Wesley Snipes?
I want to talk about what I've been doing that hasn't been House of Cards or TXK.
I'm glad.
What have you been doing, Emily?
I'm glad you've kind of told me that I've finished.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, you have.
But I was going to explain some of the other, different goals. But no, I'm not allowed.
Back to the kitchen boy.
I would like to put
By the way, what kind of sandwich would you like?
I'm not sure, I'll have to think about it.
This is like a really weird Twilight Zone.
Whilst watching House of Cards season one, I managed to knit a slouch hat that is way too big.
Cool.
It wasn't for a specific pattern, it was an experiment. And whilst the crown was shaped correctly, so obviously the rounded bit that is the top of it, it is way too big. Like, if I had huge dreadlocks or a huge afro, it'd be absolutely fine. But I have neither. And thus this hat is way too big.
Maybe you should knit yourself some dreadlocks or an afro.
Just that extra warmth.
Yes.
Or you could have a chef rat.
So I'd like to actually say at this point, if anyone listens to this podcast has a friend that could do with a lovely sort of deep red hat, and they have large hair, and they're based in the UK.
Or just a large head.
Or a large head. They'd have to have a pretty big head to actually be able to wear that hat comfortably.
Are we talking like Meekon here?
Potentially. I mean, or a cone head.
What was the other bad guy called in the Green Lantern film?
Oh, Sinestro.
No, not Sinestro.
Oh, the bad guy, Parallax.
The guy, the dude that kind of got hit on the head or something like that, and it kind of
went weird. I know what you mean.
The script writer.
the hat might fit him, but I'm talking about sort of regular people. But yeah, if you know anyone with like massive dreads or a massive afro who is after a woolly hat, get in touch. I might be able to send it their way. The other thing that I've been up to
turn it into TSK, a handbag.
No. Nope, okay. The other thing I've been up to is I finally read the first volume of The Wicked and the Divine, a comic book series that's by Kieran Gillen and Jamie McKelvey, who are both from this part of the world, as in they're British, and they're actually pretty big. Well, they're pretty big. They've been put in charge of a lot of stuff over in America over the last few years in terms of writing and art. Gillen is the writer. His name might sound familiar to some of you. He's one of the one person that at some point wrote for PC Zone. He is also one of the founders of Rock Paper Shotgun.
He also wrote a little bit for Eurogamer.
Yeah. And he is responsible for writing a book on new games journalism, which tried to revolutionise how we write about video games.
And also, if you're into comics, Kieran Gillen is, you know, the guy behind, what is it, Phonogram?
Well, yeah, he did. Phonogram was like one of his first creator and IP comic series. And they had two graphics worth of that. And he worked with Jamie McKelvey on that. Gillen's also done stuff like Young Avengers, Iron Man, I think there's been some X-Men. There might have been the odd piece for DC, but he's mostly been with Marvel. And then he's had creator-owned stuff like Phonogram, The Wicked and Divine now, and he's also got Uber with Avatar Press, which is pretty extreme.
So basically, he's got around.
Yeah.
Mishearing his name as Karen Gillen and disappointed when it's not.
Oh, dear. But yeah, The Wicked and Divine is actually really serious. The first volume's got the first five issues, and it reminded me a bit of Phonogram because it's got this whole kind of supernatural thing going on and powers and stuff. But it's not. I don't know if later issues have any Phonogram references. The two could exist in the same world, potentially. But The Wicked and Divine is about 12 gods that, I mean, it's like it's from like the entire pantheon, and basically, I don't know if they get chosen or if it's kind of random or if they decide. 12 gods come to Earth every 90 years as teenagers or whatever, and live on Earth for 2 years. Before they just die.
Right. Well, it's like very random. Divine Amish.
And the point that this happening is to kind of keep humanity inspired in that, because they do godly stuff whilst they're around. So they're usually sort of like in the entertainment industry, like pop stars and stuff.
Every 90 years?
Yeah, so they were maybe big musically or sort of like acting-wise in the 1920s, which was the last time they were around. And basically the comic series starts chronologically once there's been a flashback from the beginning of January last year.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then it continues onwards. It's pretty good, and I've got a spoiler-free review up on Hex for it. So if you need more details as to why you should read it.
Is it ever explained why 90 years?
Not in the first five issues.
Okay.
I've
always been a bit weird when, you know, sort of like they kind of lay down law like that and they don't kind of explain why that law's there like that.
Mind you, it could be because it depends on the symbolism behind the number 9 as well.
Yeah.
There might be some.
It could just be down to average human lifespan.
Yeah. I'm going to move us on to a feature, final bit for the week. As we sort of said at the beginning, we wanted to look at whether or not the TV license is value for money.
No, it's
opening argument.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
You heard Radio 1 recently? Back off. Is it value for money?
Have you heard Radio 6 recently? Yes, it is.
Yeah, the Radio 6 certainly invalidates a lot of arguments, and the odd bit on Radio 4 in terms of audio dramas or adaptations, not The Archers. The Archers doesn't justify the TV license.
Oh, God, no. I leap for whatever I'm listening to on the radio if it's and now The Archers.
I think my issue with The Archers is because it's like, you know, it's set in the countryside, but it's like mostly toffs. So I really find it a bit, it's like, oh, it's the countryside, but it's toffs. So it's kind of this weird, unrepresentative mix.
And it's crap.
Yeah. Of course, I am incredibly aware that there are apparently loads of people who really like The Archers, and they're, I suppose, well served by its existence. But elsewhere in the BBC, I suppose one of the big things that happened in the past week is that In the Flesh was not renewed for a third series. This is due to all the plans for BBC Three and moving it all online. And it also means that, oh, there's no budget to have more than one drama under the BBC Three arm.
Is that
anymore.
What? One drama?
Yeah.
A year?
Yeah. And it's not In the Flesh.
This entire thing is stupid because, I mean, in the end, everybody in the UK who's obviously, you know, within a certain age and, you know, they pay for a TV license. Now, who's to say that, you know, oh, yeah, because people don't particularly like what's on BBC One or BBC Two, then they should just fuck off. It's like, no, there is certain stuff that the BBC produces, and I want to view it just because, you know, it's not your cup of tea.
I mean, there's very...
You should have a choice.
Yeah. And the thing is that they seem to be trying to shoehorn stuff online because, like, oh, it's moving online anyway. There's lots of people watching stuff online now because, you know, Netflix and Amazon Prime and that.
Yeah.
But, of course, the stupid thing with their argument and the bit they will ignore and not talk about is that it's like, well, they're now with the BBC Three thing and moving it online and cutting $50 million from their budget to be spent elsewhere with other channels. With the budget, it's like, oh, we're going to do lots of short videos, the stuff they think, because they've because of the kind of people that are in charge of things at the BBC, and I'm not trying to stereotype, but at the same time, there is a certain stereotype, and it's a kind of upper middle class type who actually... a lot of them, they're not that connected with current trends. So a couple of years ago, there was this whole argument, oh, people have got short attention spans, and marketing and advertising responded to that by trying to produce shorter bits of content and ads with less things happening in it. It's also why perhaps articles and websites got a lot shorter in some places because they're like, oh, people have got less attention, blah, blah. What actually happens with web content is that even if it's long, what happens regardless of the length, people will scroll down it, pick out bits of it and read the bits that catch their eye, which is why you should always have good signposting on articles on websites and use things like bullet points where appropriate. But anyway, going to how this applies to video. So they're going, oh, you know, you're going to do short videos. That's what people want, blah, blah, because YouTube, Vine, blah, short. Completely ignoring, though, because they're also trying to draw in the argument for those people watching stuff on Netflix, though. It's like, well, yes, but some of the most popular things on Netflix are things that last almost an hour, like Breaking Bad, House of Cards,
yes,
Orange is the New Black.
And more importantly, things that can be basically just mass consumed.
Yeah.
Yeah, Netflix proves kind of the opposite of the, oh, people have short attention spans.
Yeah, because people will just binge on series. Binge. So they've got this, they're, it almost feels, not necessarily that it's like the trust, but almost the heads of the channels reporting to the trust, because the trust is telling them they've got to cut spending. And so the people in charge of the channels are going, oh, well, we'll bullshit this thing, and then we'll hope that nobody picks up with it in the media or in the general public that they are bullshitting in the way that they're approaching their cost cutting.
I think part of the problem is, though, is that they're cutting, you know, series like what you just mentioned and The Fades, and it's like, So you're moving stuff online. How about you not actually act stuff? Maybe if you just actually had it so that, like, Fades or, you know, whatever drama series you want to do.
In the flesh.
It is actually put online as a flagship instead. You know, that way you've already got an audience for it.
To try to be fair to them, they have been straitjacketed by this government.
Yeah.
Who also did things like they closed down the separate funding for the BBC World Service, which meant that it had to be funded from the licence fee, which was also frozen.
Yeah.
So but the BBC have done some major things. Like, that's the reason they moved out of BBC Television Centre. And
though, at the same time, I believe the Salford premises they're currently occupying is under a PFI arrangement.
Yeah, which is a deeply stupid thing. But, yeah, so they have done a hell of a lot. And
all those journalists they sacked.
Yeah. Yeah, which is...
I think it was something like at least 300, if not 400 journalists got the chop in the past 12 months.
Yeah.
Which is why, if anyone's noticed with their reporting, it's gone a bit downhill in terms of quality and accuracy. See, and certainly online.
I don't get this.
Not just recently.
I don't get this economic concept of basically just axing at both ends, trying to reduce the amount that you're, you know, kind of taking in and, you know, kind of reducing the.
Yeah, and the thing is that the programme that we've discussed this many times before, and I've written about this, that the BBC, along with a couple of other sort of channels and that, they're buying fewer US shows. So they sort of decreased their funding for drama output, but they're buying fewer US dramas or comedies, whatever, to replace that. And it's just like...
And then when we wonder why, you know, on you switch on TV nowadays and it's like repeats of reality TV. Or
it's just reality TV.
Yeah, or just basically, you know, small documentaries that are filmed on like a shoestring budget and stuff.
Also, the kind of the problem there is because Sky have been aggressively going after stuff. And also Channel 4.
Yeah.
Has been going after, you know, one or two.
But then again, they still cut back on their spending in comparison to what it used to be as well for US stuff.
Yeah.
So they're being far pickier than they used to. They're picking up stuff cheap from America that isn't like... But that is why Melissa and Joey has ended up on E4.
Mm.
So...
Did they actually bring it over?
Kind of weird.
They did. Yeah, I mean, I think we're like a season behind or something stupid.
What's this?
Melissa and Joey. Obviously.
No, we started from the beginning and it was more than a season because the series started like either 2010 or 9. And
yeah, it had been going for a while before it had been picked up.
Yeah, but
So whose bright idea was to bring that shit over?
I don't know.
Maybe it was going cheap.
I was trying to get explanations... I was trying to get explanations from the Americans that I have on Facebook as to how
they won't
this...
They won't buy Agent Carter.
Yeah. Or...
That's annoying.
I mean, I suppose there's still a chance that maybe Netflix might license it. For least over here.
Well, to be honest, though, it's been pretty weird, you know, British TV, because if you think about it, Buffy bought by BBC. But Angel was bought by, you know, Channel 4. And I believe there was something that was bought, like, by Channel 4, and then, like, its sister
Channel
show turned up on, like, Channel 5 or something.
But Channel 4 had problems showing Angel. That was a troubled broadcast relationship.
That was a deeply stupid situation where they bought something and they tried putting it on at the same... because they'd thought... Oh, BBC keeps chucking out all the genre stuff about 6 o'clock on BBC Two. So that's what we'll aim for with Angel, even though it's, you know, rated higher for violence and everything. So, in other words, we'll cut it to ribbons. And then we'll say, oh, people are complaining about it. And it's not getting very good ratings. It's not getting very good ratings and people are complaining about it because you're cutting something to shreds. So it's too violent for the slot still that they were trying to put it on to. And the people who were wanting to watch it were noticing that it was getting shredded every single episode. And it's like, well, I'm not going to watch it.
I mean, I hate it.
That's Joe Burns.
I hate it when, you know, they cut, like, you know, stuff like Scrubs or, you know, even stuff like that, you know, because it's obvious annoying. When they do it.
Can we get back to the license fee situation, though? Because speaking of Channel 4, Channel 4 does get a bit of a license fee, and I believe that is obviously what they fund a lot of their factual programming with, and I suspect they sort of like Channel 4 News might end up with a bit of it. And actually, if we're talking about quality of news output,
Channel 4 News is still very good.
Yeah, in comparison to every other channel's news output. Okay, I do question interviewing techniques and questioning of the likes of, was it Jon Snow sometimes, depending on how popular the person is he's talking
Tarantino.
To. Oh, God, then the Tarantino situation. Christian Garamuthi, I can't pronounce his name, he can get a bit iffy sometimes with interviewing. But at least they actually...
Although, did you see him interviewing Michael
Richard
Ayoade. Richard, yeah.
Ayoade. I didn't...
that was brilliant.
I didn't see it, but I kind of heard about it, and yeah, that was a bit weird.
But
mangling a name because I'm looking at another article at the moment trying to.
I think what's annoying with some of the funding for like the BBC is the amount of sort of sports stuff they've bought the rights to. So it's not on Sky, and it's like, well, it's this kind of stereotype that everyone likes sports, and if you look at sort of like Saturday programming schedule during the day. And the fact that you get two Match of the Day programmes as well. And then a huge chunk of BBC News time is dedicated to sports. And it's like, well, what the hell?
Yeah, it's, the news, in the footballs, are, you know, in just in general sports news comes on when I've got the news on and at, you know, Channel Surf, something else, see if they're not showing bloody sport. But it's kind of, I understand why they do it, because after all, they're trying to be popular with stuff and also to be niche. I think
they've bought too much in, though, at the moment.
What's too much sport?
Yeah, they've bought, like, they've signed up too much to television rights for various live things.
I have honestly no idea. Because it just, it bounces off my head.
But
I just ignore it.
Other than and then we've mentioned the reality TV thing, which includes, in a way, things like Antiques Roadshow and all that bloody Let's Find a
Cash
House
in the Attic
bullshit things and Cash in the Attic. And,
it does make me wonder how many BBC programmes that have been airing for like 10 or more years. You know, because, I mean, stuff like Flog It and, you know, Songs of Praise and...
Well, you're never going to get rid of
Country
Songs of Praise.
File and...
Songs of Praise helps them because they have a quota for how much, like, programming dedicated to religious stuff.
I don't understand why they have any, you know, any religious
I
stuff.
Think...
But why is there a quota?
But...
Because it's part of their public remit, which I kind of understand.
Why is having religious things you know, point of their public remit. I don't see that.
Because they have to cater for all tastes.
Yeah.
Which is why they put...
Because that's why they're allowed... It's part of the whole having a licence fee in comparison to ITV.
So when can I start saying, you know, arguing for a quota for, you know, geek stuff on, you know, the BBC?
Well, yeah.
So that is a source of annoyance, because whenever they mention anything that's, you know, kind of geeky... It's they do it with the air of a grandparent being given an iPad for the first time.
Yeah. They are old fashioned.
This is all very strange, and I'm sure that the children like it. But this gaming thing will never actually pick
we'll
up.
Never take
says the reporter standing outside, you know, the launch of a new multi-billion dollar console.
I think also part of the problem of the program, not that I hate pensioners, but a lot of the programming on BBC One and Two is certainly geared towards persons over the age of 60. And it's like, and it just kind of reflects how the main political parties in this country keep pandering to pensioners in a sickening manner to the detriment of like every other group, especially the current government. And it's just like, I do wonder if the reason why there's so much programming aimed at over 60s is because they're worried.
Cheap.
It's cheap. Also, they're just worried about, well, they need to appeal to the voters of the main political parties, or the people that vote.
I think.
Because they'll affect the license fee at the end of the day.
I think we are getting a bit too political on this.
But it's a political subject, because it is essentially a tax.
Screw you, commie.
That we have to, you know, every household has to pay, except for those with a person that's aged over 70 or 75 in their household. You've got to pay for a TV licence in order to have the right to have a television, or to have the right to obviously watch stuff from the BBC.
Yeah, and bearing in mind that, I mean, for like American listeners that don't really know about the TV licence or anything like that, it's... You can't even use the, you know, kind of reasoning of, oh, well, it's not plugged up to a TV area. We're only using it for video games or for, you know, kind of, you know, DVDs or anything like that.
I think you might be able to if it's a monitor.
Yeah. But it's going to be stretching it, because they'll still argue it's like, if there's an internet connection to the damn thing, they'll be like, well, are you watching iPlayer?
Yeah, you can be, you know, watching BBC programs via that.
And it's like, I kind of like the BBC being ad-free, as it were.
Yeah.
But I do feel that it's still letting down people who are under a certain age, are also license fee payers.
It's nice that it's ad-free, it's just bad that there's just so little that I would actually want to watch on there.
Yeah.
At the moment.
I mean, it's also annoying, like, I'm going to have to...
always have a choice.
Yeah. I'm just going to drag us back towards politics for a moment, because this is an election year, money's going to be spent across the channels to have live debates between the political parties, and obviously the Green Party's being snubbed at the moment, despite the fact that their membership's now greater than that of UKIP.
Yeah, in response to this. Yeah.
And I personally think the only reason that UKIP is as big as it is because Nigel Farage kept getting shoved on our screens for about five, six, seven years.
And this is the thing, it's like, especially on BBC, and because it's cheap to do, because of the fact that it's paid for by taxpayers' money. So...
You know what's really bad is the fact that it's not just, you know, Nigel Farage's, you know, in our faces, you know, on the TV. It's also to do with the fact that if you go onto any slightly political, you know, webpage that's based in the UK, you will get UKIP supporters, you know, spouting off, you know.
But can we keep this back to the license fee? License fee money. License fee money has been paying to bump up political campaigns. So even though, in theory, we don't pay for political parties to have a campaign fund due to the nature of the BBC, we have paid for them to have some degree of campaign presence on our television screens, especially when they appear on things like Question Time and all that kind of thing, or on like Andrew Marr or something. And it's just... Oh.
Yeah, Sunday mornings are incredibly political.
It's when that's because they nobody's up, so they're like, oh, we can just cram in all that stuff that we have to do under the remit.
But part of the problem is that when political stuff after political stuff after political stuff, it's only gonna engage the politically aware and politically active anyway.
Yeah.
Which already have their, you know, opinions about stuff and whatnot. So it's kind of like, it's not, you know,
there's
getting
more,
a new
there's more there's more political programming on the BBC than there is geek programming.
Yes.
They are failing in their geek stuff, especially since Cookie, did you used to watch Micro Live?
Rings a bell.
It was early 80s BBC program, and it was all about computers and programming and...
Yeah, because they used to have BBC Micros on there.
Yes. They did, but they also covered other machines, you know, to be perfectly fair to them. But I don't understand why in the early 80s they had a TV series, at least one TV series, dedicated to, you know, covering computers and, you know, computer technology and everything like that. And they have not bothered since.
Well, the closest they probably would have got...
Click, wouldn't it?
Well, or before Click, Tomorrow's World, before that got canned.
Yeah. I remember late at night, like really late at night, like, you know, past 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock.
Well, you talk about Open University programming.
Yes.
Well, yeah, because part of all the cutbacks I've had since austerity and Open University going, oh, we might as well just put the videos online now, they stopped their partnership with the BBC.
See, I mean, I never used to, you know, really stay up to watch them or record them or anything like that, but I like that kind of concept where, you know, you're getting at least kind of some sort of learning kind of thing happening rather than just, you know...
Because,
I mean, whenever I turn on, you know, when we're in, go up to bed and stick on the TV and whatnot to fall asleep to or whatever, you know, you stick on, like, BBC One or Two and it's, you know, it's Match the Day or, you know...
A film.
Random film.
Sign Zone.
I think one dangerous situation we could be in, and certainly if we end up with a Conservative-led government this is something they've been talking. That side's been talking about over the past couple of years. There is currently in the UK a desperate grab for airwave spectrums. So, so everything, from radio waves to what TV broadcasts on to mobile to GPS to everything that broadcasts through the air. And as part of this, I'm not sure if it's been the Department for Media and whatever, or Department for Culture and Sport, or if it's been Ofcom who fielded it first. But certainly there's been a couple of MPs that have wanted to run with this. And they've been like, oh, well, we could get rid of broadcast TV in the UK and force it all online, free up the spectrum and sell it off. That has been talked about
in the past 12 months. A long time.
And of course, the thing is, though, is that obviously we're licensed fee payers. Now, if that happens, and if you consider how shit internet is, you guarantee that we'll still be expected to pay for license fee money, but the government will not do anything to further improve internet structure to ensure that everywhere's got essentially fiber optics or something. Well, I don't know if there's really anything better on the market, but there's fiber to premises more than fiber to cabinet. And certainly not in rural areas, so we'd be screwed. I mean, despite the super efforts of super fast broadband, which are mixed at best. It's super fast Cornwall. So basically, you could end up with a situation where, we're all licensed fee payers and we're not getting any value for money because we're having to do it all online and because the infrastructure in the country isn't being invested in by the government anyway, and they've just sold off all that spectrum and they haven't bothered to reinvest it because you can guarantee they wouldn't.
Yeah.
That suddenly we'd be in an even worse situation where we'd be getting no value for money from our license fee.
Well, I mean, let's face it,
anyone who came up with or supports that idea doesn't know anything about technology. Like a lot of these things where they come up with an idea, like that MP who said, why don't we have a watershed for the internet?
What?
You're a moron. That's how you've, you've just let us know there that you haven't got a bloody clue how the internet works. A series of tubes.
But I think that is all we've got time for this week. I think basically a lot of us don't feel we're getting value for money at the moment, but that perhaps certain corners of society are.
I will just say, I still record a reasonable amount of things off the BBC and I listen to, the radio when I'm out and about. But compare it to ITV and how many things you watch on ITV.
This is a good point. And that is a advertised sort of advertising funded model. Yeah.
And they've got about 5 channels now.
Yeah.
I think my top channels on Freeview at the moment are probably kind of Dave and Channel 4. Yeah, kind of Channel 4 is one type thing.
And Dave BBC. Buys a lot of stuff from the BBC.
Yeah. Then BBC, then Channel 5, then ITV. Because I'd never find anything that I want to watch on ITV.
But anyway, that is all we've got time for this week. So it is goodbye from...
It's goodnight from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Twitter and... Super Retroid on Twitter and Retroid on Eurogamer.net.
It's goodnight from me, Paul aka _Cookie on Twitter.
It's goodnight from me, I'm Paul Blewett on Twitter. And I'm Paul Blewett in real life.
Yes, you are.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter as EK6891. You could probably grab pictures of the hat that is huge on geekyknittingexperiments.tumblr.com. There are pictures of it in progress. And then this sort of final thing on top of my head, looking absolutely huge. You can find NerdAssemble over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. Don't forget you can find us on iTunes and Stitcher. I'll try and keep an eye on it actually making its way on there this week rather than waiting for an email. You can find us on Twitter at NerdsPodcast. Plus you can find us on as NerdAssemble Podcast on Facebook and Google+. Don't forget to fill out that survey at bit.ly/nerds2015. And don't forget to visit hexdimension.com. Good night.
Good night.